the Keynote Beard podcast. Podcast set up by two journalism students in Waterford, Keane and Dale. Talk about all aspects of football, give it internationals and Premier League. Keane, where do we get the name from?
Well, the name came about after a lengthy discussion in the pub one day about Roy Keane's beard growing abilities and how it may have outshined his footballing abilities.
And what happened hours later after we came up with the name?
Unfortunately, he shaved the beard off, but I think we might stick with it, will we?
Well, it's iconic, isn't it?
It is.
The only shame is it was announced by Ryan Tubbard in the Late Show. If you're a fan of Ryan Tubbard, you might not enjoy this podcast, but shall we get on with it? Just a bit about ourselves. Keen journalism student, what interests you as it takes a podcast and football?
Football, well, I just love the game, love watching it, love studying it, love arguing about it. That's probably my favourite part about it, in all honesty. But I just love the kind of everything about it. Like, why does anybody love football?
Yeah.
Yourself?
Write about football the past 5-6 years on all Premier League clubs, mainly Manchester United. Bits on international, and of course, a little bit of an argument myself, which listeners might enjoy as we...
We'll make for a good duo, I'd say, in that department.
But yeah, looking crack on to the internationals, we've just wrapped up from an international week. Ireland took on Gibraltar, which they won 7-0, and they drew with Germany. Keane, funnily enough, was in Germany for the second game. What was the atmosphere like? Tell us about the trip.
The trip was fantastic. We flew into Amsterdam and drove up to Gelsenkirchen, which was a 2-hour drive. And the buzz around the city was just fantastic.
Tell us about the red light.
I hope we're all going to get on to that now. It's an experience altogether. Like, it's very very different to what I'd be used to back home now, I tell you the truth.
Yeah, I'd say back in Carlow.
Yeah, there's not too many red lights there. The only ones there stop you. But no, Gelsenkirchen was a buzz with Irish fans. We were in the square playing headers and volleys, drinking beers as Irish fans are known to do. The Germans were all gathering around the circle looking at us, and it was a different kind of experience now. We just took over the city, basically.
Anyone recognises Craig David with the beard?
No, sadly enough. I was wearing my glasses, so I didn't look like Craig at the time. And it wasn't properly shaved, so.
So going on to the stadium, acoustics, sound, was it loud? Was it full?
It was partially full now. There was one section of the stand adjacent to me which wasn't full. But in terms of sound, German fans aren't great at making noise for the national team. It's mostly
quite
Irish.
A contrast to clubs.
Very much so. Like, you look at Dortmund and
Schalke.
It was in the Veltins Arena even, and it held the noise very well. Like, the Irish fans were very loud, so we were shouted up most of the 90 minutes.
And afterwards, I'd imagine. After that goal.
Unbelievable. It was a fantastic. You could see me on bench warmers, actually. Shoes off for the boys in green. It was on the chance of the night.
I've never went away for an Ireland game. Obviously, see him at home, Croke Park and Aviva.
It's my first trip away, actually.
Really?
And it won't be my last.
Won't be your last. Really enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed it.
The Irish fans, you know, whether they go to an international tournament or be it away or even at home when I've seen it, it's always great crack.
Yeah.
I know I use the language crack. That's very Irish itself. But they portray a good image when they're away. Now, the one thing that did let me down were some of the scarves I've seen being sold at the game. Obviously, the
German game or...
German game. There's obviously some hostility between Germany and England. And of course, going back years, Ireland and England. And look, the way I see that kind of stuff is, it's 2014.
Get on with it.
We enjoy football. We watch English football week in, week out. It's quite ironic how some people have that mentality. And it's just needless. But for the majority, when Irish fans go away to games, it seems to be great crack. Everyone's having
fun.
But
the scarves at the Germany game were actually being sold by Germans.
Being sold by Germans, right.
No Irish person was selling flags over there or scarves.
Would you imagine, because they were the home side?
Yeah.
They obviously seen the market, and I hope you didn't see anyone wearing the actual scarves.
No,
did you? Because
I
I've
didn't
seen some outlets in England kind of portraying that yeah, people were buying these, or even worse, even selling them.
No,
but if it was the Germans,
I didn't see anyone now. But the Germans had a few now in the middle of the square trying to sell them, but the police moved them on fairly quickly, actually.
Okay.
So they did when they were started selling them.
Speaking of buying and selling, Keane brought home a program from the game in German. So, well, I am thankful I can't actually read.
I might be able to pronounce
the name of the magazine.
Name, it's Aktuell das offizielle Stadionmagazin des Deutschen Fußball Bundes.
Brilliant.
And I hope I did not torture the German language there, the beautiful German language.
This was free.
It was free. All programs are free.
It's quite a big magazine, and you know, people talk about, when they talk about German football, you talk about the price of tickets, the price of fan culture, and it's a lot cheaper than that in England.
Yeah, very, very much so.
How much is your ticket for the game?
60 euros.
And was that, where did you buy it, off the FAI? Or?
FAI, yeah, we got it off the FAI.
Probably different when it comes to, it's different Champions League too, but you see tickets being sold at Dortmund at £13, and in England you're talking 60 for Arsenal.
A friend of mine went to an Arsenal Champions League game, paid £108 to see them play Bayern Munich. Like, it's a lot of money.
Here's a free program. It's like a big magazine. It's not like a small program. You get another poster in there.
They do a lot of talking about Germany and not much about Ireland.
They actually talk about Aidan McGeady as the most promising headless chicken in the Republic. But actually, yeah, moving on to the game, even though actually the magazine does say it costs €1 to buy it, but no, Keane here probably stole it.
That's a beautiful. Fraulein gave it to me, along with five others.
Moving on to the game.
Yeah.
We had Gibraltar just beforehand, a 7-0 win against a bunch of postmen or whatever they are.
Respect where it's due. Still international footballers, and we're the ones talking about it.
Do you believe that game gave Ireland that mentality boost they needed to go into a game against Germany?
Definitely so, especially when the Germans lost 2-0 against Poland. It was definitely a morale booster. 7-0 is a huge result, no matter who you're playing, even if they are a team of postmen, as you described them. But it brought us into the game with a bit of belief. Even the fans had a bit of belief around Gelsenkirchen.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't meet one fan that thought we were going to get absolutely hammered until the goal went in. And then,
I suppose, given the game and looking at the German side, you have some fighter players that retired after they won the World Cup.
Yeah, Philipp Lahm.
Lahm's a massive name. But even saying that, if you look at the squad that played, the majority of them are playing for top European sides. You can't say that about some of the Irish players.
No.
In fact, which Irish player is playing for top side? Seamus Coleman, you can argue.
Coleman is maybe McGeady.
McGeady, yeah.
But for top clubs, I can't recall one.
No, you see, that's the difference. I think what the Irish team has, which we had it years ago when we didn't get through to, I think it was the
2010, was it?
Yeah. It was just the Irish side has just a fight and belief.
It does. It kind of has a driving belief behind its own self-worth. But I think that's always been the thing with Irish sides, even going back to Jack Charlton years and the 2002 World Cup as well. Like, we drew against Germany in the 2002 World Cup too.
Well, even with Jack Charlton, you go back to Eamon Dunphy, was very critical of the way Jack Charlton played and the way that he'd some great players like Ronnie Whelan that could play football, but he chose to play Route 1 instead. But look what happened to Italian.
He also had that criticism in the German game as well. He thought that we could have went out and won the game if we weren't as Route 1 about it, if we had started a few different players. But
you see, I looked into it just before we played the Germans, and Germany obviously lost last week to Poland 2-0.
Yeah.
And the last time Germany have suffered back-to-back defeats in qualifiers was back in 2001. I can't think for the top of my head who that was against, but that's a long time ago, and that happens very, very rarely. But that Germany team, it looked there for the taking.
It did. It didn't look like the World Cup winning team.
No, not a shadow.
But in saying that, they still moved the ball pretty brilliantly in the game. But
when they go forward, you're fearing the worst.
Yeah.
They have that magic, and they have, you know, Ireland would plug away at you the whole time, but they haven't got that class that the Germans have to make things happen then and nowhere.
We had no shape, I think, and no kind of movement in the channels like the German did. We just kind of played the ball and hoped to keep it for a longer period of time than 2 minutes.
And I suppose that we haven't got that kind of a class to make things happen out of nowhere. I suppose John O'Shea did come out of nowhere unexpectedly and got that equaliser, which... I'm surprised you're still alive. I'd say now you jumped off the terrace.
I think I moved 3 seats down, 3 rows down into the terrace. No, but when you're talking about talented players, we could be losing one in Jack Grealish going to England. Very talented player. Be a big shame if he went now.
You have that. And there's so many great players. Like, didn't McCarthy have the chance to play for
Scotland?
Yeah. And he chose us. Now, he wasn't playing against the Germans, but... the quicker Ireland get him back for next qualifier is vital. It's
very vital. Midfielder.
And there's lots of talk at the minute about the midfield, the Irish midfield. And, you know, what it's lacking, or is there too many balls played sideways?
Yeah.
At times, against opposition like the Germans, you need to keep as much possession as you can. But then there's times where you can get caught in possession because they have these energetic players that can easily take the ball off. Yeah.
And the Irish can move the ball forward quickly, and you could see it in the game there on Tuesday. We just couldn't get the ball forward like the Germans could. Mm. And that's a major problem that's been for any Irish side the past 4 years, four or 5 years, even under Trapattoni when we nearly got to the World Cup.
You see,
and did get to Euro 2012, we still weren't able to move the ball quickly, I don't think.
Twitter and Facebook on Tuesday night was quite critical of our analysis after the game, because Eamon Dunphy and the boys were quite critical.
Yeah.
Critical of the way Ireland played. Obviously, they were happy to see we got the results, but they kind of believe we could have did that bit more. We could have actually got 3 points. Fantastic. And we're probably sounding a bit similar right now. We're a bit critical of the way we played, but at the end of the day, it was a fantastic result. My only main concern was, which you can tell me more on, Roy Keane looked a bit cold.
He did. He did look very cold without that luscious locks on his face. But I'd say John O'Shea warmed him up a bit about that strike.
That's right. It was real.
It was something else. Like, I wasn't in Italian 90. Wasn't even born, but it felt like that kind of vibe.
Buzz.
You know, it was just after the game around the city was just fantastic.
And did you go home that Wednesday night? Or did you stay?
No, we stayed in Gelsenkirchen for that night and then went back to Amsterdam the following day to catch a flight.
Catch a flight?
Yeah.
So moving on, what have we got next, Keane?
Well, we have the whole Raheem Sterling situation. Did Roy Hodgson throw him under the bus a little bit?
Watching the actual press conference and then looking at what's transcripted in some media outlets, it's quite different. I wouldn't say I'm under the bus. That can be portrayed by the way it was covered by some people. I think it was more of a dig out at the 2-day recovery plan that Brendan Rodgers has installed at Liverpool. To go more on that, say after a game you get 2 days of maybe lighter training and then you're pushed back in. Reading Paul Scholes' column on the whole debate, he says that when he's at United and he was getting to the age of say 34 or whatever, and
he was trained less and less.
He had a 2-day recovery plan, and then he went with the boy. The same if you're coming back from an injury, you need to make exceptions. But on the whole Raheem Sterling thing, it really, really annoyed me how you got these people that are abusing a young player who is arguably England's hottest prospect.
Yeah, he really is.
Who you should be looking after. What good would it have done? England went down and they won 1-0.
Yeah.
What good would it have done if he played that game, was notably tired, had to come off, played terrible? Would he got same amount of abuse or more abuse?
It would have been a shot for his confidence.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think you touched on it when we talked earlier on that he is young, so maybe he doesn't need a recovery. But in saying that, there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. He played a lot of games in a short period of time.
Look
for any young lad that catch up on you.
Look at the time scale of the last 2 years, and look at what a player he's started off as and what he is now. He's one of Liverpool's main players.
He's developed
right now
into a fantastic player for Liverpool.
At the World Cup, he was a standout for England. He was fantastic.
A team full of very ordinary looking team, you know.
Great names, but he still stood out. And he You know, I just think that with young players like that, we've seen it with Michael Owen, they're so young, they're so talented. You need to be wary of burning them out.
Yeah, that was a big problem with Owen, wasn't it, after he got that first hamstring injury?
Yeah, it was...
He was done.
A recipe for disaster. I was saying there's a number of players in the league right now, you're looking at young players, another one of Yanazai. I'm sure the likes of Van Hal, and there's other players in world football that managers just need to really look after, because when they do get to that age, say 24, 26, and they should be hitting their peak, if they're being burned out at such a young age, they don't get a chance to reach that peak because they're injured.
Speaking on that, I'd like to bring up Jack Wilshere, who kind of hasn't hit the peaks that people thought he should be at right now in his footballing career. And is that as a case of burnout, or is that just the case of he's not quite there yet? And he still can't get there.
I think injuries haven't been too favourable to Wilshere, but if he can remain fit and get a run of games under his belt, I do think he has the potential to be one of England's most important players.
Yeah, fantastic talent, I think, but...
And it's also, he needs to have his head screwed on, and at times you can question that.
That's what I was going to say. His attitude is very questionable at times.
It can be,
but he's young,
and that's the one thing when I seen England do so poorly at the World Cup, there was talks of will they or should they get Rodgers to hit or Hodgson to hit the highway. And the reason I said no was, at the World Cup, he went there and gave young lads an opportunity.
Yeah, he did.
And that's, unless you have a world-class squad of ready-made, that's what you do, because when the next European competition comes around, they have that experience, they hit the ground running, and he had the balls to do that.
He did. And there's some great talents coming through that he did bring.
Yeah.
Luke Shaw, Raheem Sterling, you mentioned, Jack Wilshere.
Danny Welbeck.
An interesting one. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Danny's one of the topics for the show today. Signed for Arsenal in January for a fee of 17 million.
16, 17 thereabouts. 17. I thought it was a bit inflated now at the time.
Well, I think it's one of those that if
it works out,
it works out, you're never going to look at the price tag. Yeah. That's the same with every transfer, really. Danny has every single one of the attributes you need to be a striker, except finishing, which is quite ironic. But it's something that if he's played in a position, which for a long time he wasn't at United, if he's played as a centre-forward and he's depended on him, over time, he'll get a grasp of that. And I think with the attributes he already carries, I think he can make that a top striker.
He can. He is very physical, very quick player, very strong.
Great link-up play,
can run with the ball. As you said, the finishing isn't great. He did get a hat-trick for Arsenal, to be fair, in the Champions League. So he's kind of hit the ground running. But it hasn't been consistent goals yet. But you can't really expect it to be that quick, can you? That quick of an impact.
No, but a question... Wenger said it himself, if he was in the country time, he wouldn't have signed Welbeck permanently. Do you believe if Giroud wasn't injured, would they have went into Welbeck at all?
No, not at all. I don't think he would have dipped his hand in.
So when Giroud comes back, what happens to Welbeck?
If Welbeck plays well, Giroud might not get a game. They might play the two of them up top. As you said, the link-up play there is good. Or he could put Welbeck back out on the wing again, which I don't think would be a good decision, because it didn't work out at United, won't work out at Arsenal.
Again, we apologise for some of the background sounds. I think someone's drying their hands. Welbeck, I didn't particularly think it was the brightest of idea for Manchester United to sell him to a domestic rival, because I can see when a player he's capable of becoming. I think that is one that could come back and bite the club in the behind. I know you can go on length and talk about Wayne Rooney, Robin Van Persie, Radamel Falcao, and then you got young players like James Wilson coming through. I know you can touch on that, but you're still strengthening a domestic opposition rival by selling a player like that to him so easily. And it just let me puzzle this small bit. But yeah, that's really it on Welbeck. On the topics we've talked about with Danny Welbeck and Raheem Sterling, of course, we're on Twitter at RKB Podcast. Let us know what you think as well, and send in your own thoughts. You can argue with us, you can call us every name under the sun.
We don't mind. We're only voices.
That's all we are. We don't actually exist.
No, we're just talking heads.
So just before we do wrap it up,
we have a pick the PL winners at the weekend.
The fixtures, yeah. And then we'll briefly touch on what we call the standout game, the game to watch out for. And funnily enough, it's not Man City versus Spurs. So Man City and Spurs, where do you stand on this one, Keane?
I think Spurs can go to the Etihad and win. I think they got a good result against a very, very informed Southampton team last time. They'll come back pretty strong, pretty fresh. They didn't have many internationals out, I don't think. And I think they can grab one from City.
I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to be safe.
Sitting on the fence.
City at home, the Etihad is a very tough place to go and to get 3 points.
Stoke done it.
Stoke aren't ever an easy team to face. But like, there are exceptions like that. There are, say, some fans are called bogey teams, although I wouldn't necessarily agree there's ever a bogey team. It's just it's a matter of who's better on the day. So I'm going to go for a draw between Manchester City and Spurs.
Fair enough.
Next up is Arsenal and Hull.
Now, I have went for Arsenal in this one, but I don't think it'll be as easy as it seems on paper. Hull aren't a bad side this year. They've strengthened very well. Probably haven't had the best starts to the Premier League, but I think they'll give Arsenal a game, but I still think Arsenal will come out on top.
I think it's going to be one of those where Arsenal make a really tough job of it. They should put the game away, but they'll definitely create chances. But it's going to be one of those 1-0 or 2-0, I think. Watch it go back and they'll beat them 4-0 at the weekend.
4-1 now, Danny Welbeck hat-trick.
I'm going to go for an Arsenal, will it? Let's stay safe. That
yeah, it's a pretty safe bet. Burnley at West Ham now, two claret and blue clubs. What do you reckon?
West Ham really impressed me the past few weeks against Liverpool and against United. I think they're a side, they've some new players. Sissoko is another one, and Valencia.
Valencia, I think Sacco, fantastic player now for them. There's no more talk about Big Sam not being able to set out a team to play football anymore, is there?
No.
But he never had the players, and I think he's got a good little squad there now.
He has lots of taste with the likes of Valencia. Yeah, that really shocked me against Liverpool. The start of the game, West Ham just really went for it.
Yeah.
And for the first half, I was kind of thinking, right, Liverpool are going to get them in the second half because they're going to tire out. They didn't.
So too.
They just kept catch them. They were in their face, and that's why this weekend I'm going to go for a West Ham win.
I'll agree with you on that against Burnley. I think that's the safest bet for the weekend. West Ham beating Burnley away. So yeah, I'll agree with you there. I think Saka will have a huge game.
Crystal Palace and Chelsea.
London Derby. Chelsea, as everybody knows.
I can't see anyone really stopping Chelsea, if I'm being totally honest. I think Chelsea, that's one they're going to run away with again.
Can't see anybody stopping them, as in an undefeated season.
I won't say that because things happen, twists happen in the season, but I can't see anyone stopping them in the title race, and I definitely can't see Crystal Palace.
I think it's too early to be deciding a title race, but if you were to pick a champion...
It's a brave man's bet, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You would pick Chelsea, but you should have enough for Palace. They definitely have enough for Palace on their good day, but no disrespect to Palace fans. I'll go with Chelsea. Everton at Villa now.
This is the game we picked, obviously, for the game the weekend.
For obvious reasons. Roy Keane's beard, or lack thereof. And also because it's one we both couldn't pick a winner in. Both sides that are kind of contrasting to their own selves from last year. Everton
massively
haven't been a shade of themselves from last year. Villa have improved drastically. And I think it'll be a very interesting game. It's hard to decide.
Why do you think Villa have changed without bringing Roy Keane into it? I think last season and the season before last,
they were a very young team. They were a team in transition. And they've gone through that transition now, and they've kind of grown up a bit. Fabian Delph has come into his own. He's been a good player for them. They've really impressed me at Anfield this year when they won 1-0. They got their goal, shut up shop. Liverpool couldn't find anything for them.
And of course you got Flair coming back from a fantastic World Cup. And he's a real force back there. He's a leader.
He's only coming back into the team now though, from injury. He might not even get a game at the weekend.
You'd hope, up against the likes of Lukaku, that you'd want,
if you're a Villa fan, you want Flair on the pitch. But they'll have Christian Benteke, it looks like, on the pitch, who could cause a lot of damage for Distan and Jackie Elka, I think.
What do you make of that pair this season? You know, as we've touched on, Everton haven't been anywhere near the level they were last season.
The pair, Jackie Elka played the World Cup. I think he's not the kind of guy that goes playing a very tough season for Everton and then goes to play a World Cup and can come back.
Don't tell David Moyes that.
I just think it's the whole team, really. They just kind of haven't really settled yet. But they will. They will, because it's a good squad. James McCarthy's been out injured. Coleman's been out injured. Barkley's been out injured. They've been missing a good chunk of the team. Lukaku hasn't fired yet, but he will. And I just think it's one of those starts of the season, like it's happened Liverpool this year as well.
So are we going for a win for Everton, a win for Villa, or a draw?
The more that I looked at it, I was siding with Villa, but I think I'm going to go with a draw. Yeah, 2-2 draw.
We're in agreement.
Yeah. Newcastle versus Leicester now.
Newcastle have had a terrible start.
Newcastle have been dreadful. I can't see how Pardew is still in the job. He did get a long contract, which is probably the main reason. But
friends of Mike Ashley.
Yeah, that's it.
I share a bottle of Dupe every Christmas.
I'm going for a Leicester win. I really like their attitude this season.
Who is that guy up top?
Ujoa.
It's
spelled Ulola.
Yeah.
I never quite got that.
He's really getting his name on the score sheet, isn't he?
I was very surprised Jamie Vardy didn't get a call up to the England squad.
Mm.
Or did he?
Don't think so.
I'd be very surprised if he doesn't get a call up by the end of the season.
Yeah. But if he keeps up his current form, there's no reason why he shouldn't.
Yeah.
So you went for a Leicester win.
I did.
I'm going to agree again. There's several lessons here we don't agree with. In the next one, we agree again. And funnily enough, the manager has won an award today, hasn't he?
Yeah, and the striker, Graziano Pell, and Ronald Koeman have got player of the month and manager of the month, which is for September, which is pretty fitting because Southampton have been a team that nobody expected to be there.
Before the season started, there was already people saying that they go down because of the players have left.
I couldn't believe that talk at all, because they still had a good spine of a team there. You know, James Ward-Prowse was coming through.
Morgan Schneiderlin.
They didn't think they'd hold on to him, though.
No.
To be fair. But Jose Fonte is still there.
Got rid of the best striker in the league. Ricky Lambert.
An iconic number 7 for the club. Very good player for the club. Southampton fans may disagree with you on your little sarcastic comment there. But they brought in an even better player in Pell, I think. Like, he's young, he's talented, he's physical. He scored for Italy during the international break, which is always good.
Then you have Sunderland, the opposition to weekend.
Yeah, Sunderland, I think away from home at St Mary's, I don't think they can get a result because Southampton,
just in top form, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I know they lost last time, but it looked like a team that's brimming full of confidence. Even against Tottenham, they had their chances to equalise. And I think they'll have too much for Sunderland tomorrow.
Next up, it's Harry Redknapp's QPR against Liverpool. And just actually before we go on to that, two of us have agreed that Southampton will beat Sunderland. QPR, Liverpool.
It'll be one. I think Liverpool will make hard work of, but I think they will get the victory against QPR. QPR have been pretty poor this year.
For the Liverpool fans out there, I'd be very worried if they don't give QPR a trimming. They've been absolutely shambolic.
Liverpool fans should be worried if they don't give them a trimming, especially if the Balotelli doesn't start hitting form soon, and if it's not in a game like this,
yeah, he should be scoring goals. You know, like I just said, QPR have been shambolic this season.
How do you make a Ferdinand at the back?
Ferdinand at the back is, you know, they're leaking a serious amount of goals.
A lot of goals.
You can't speak positively about Ferdinand there, or Chalk, or any of those players. And the one thing they do have is experience, and the way they're losing games and the manner they're losing the games, it looks like a team without any experience. It looks like some contrast. Yeah,
it really does, and that's why I'm going for Liverpool win. But I do think the way Liverpool are playing, they'll make hard work of it. 2-1, scrappy win.
I'll go with Liverpool. I win this weekend. I just QPR just decided that. Have me really surprised when I watch them. They're just that poor.
Will it be a gold glove for you, or will it be?
I think Liverpool would score goals.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. I think
we're in agreement there, but I think it'll be a tough one for them. Stoke at Swansea at the Britannia Stadium. I couldn't separate the two of them. Stoke have always been good at home. I think it'll be a draw, score draw. That's pretty much all I have to say about it. Swansea had a good start to the season, but
Before we recorded the podcast, we obviously put down a sheet of fixtures and gave our predictions. And I did say an away win for Swansea, which Stoke are never an easy team to go to and to beat. Very tough. I'm actually going to change prediction. I'm going to say a draw.
Draw as well. You're agreeing with me.
Yeah.
We're in agreement a lot here. For the sake of it, on the next one, West Brom United. I think I'll go with a 6-0 win for West Brom. No, I'll go with the United win. I think they're too strong. They make a good challenge for top four this year.
I think the main thing is they've played a lot this season, and I would say 10 players injured, 9 players injured. And that's been a problem, and that's what I believe has shown up in consistency. If they can get players back, I still don't believe it's going to be that easy against West Brom. They're away from home. And they make tough work of it, I think.
Berahino's in good form. Is he for West Brom, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in very good form. I still think United will have too much, though.
They should have. On paper, there's no comparison at all. It's about, can they get some players back fit? They've got Chelsea coming up as well. Some of the players are going to come back now. Do you rest them? Do you give them 5 minutes? Do you keep them for Chelsea? That's what's going to be going through Louis van Gaal's head. For me, I'd say Manchester United win, but it won't be as clear cut as it should be.
I think it'll be clear cut. I think Falcao will get form in this game, get a few. Di Maria will be key, obviously, and I think two of them will have massive games. Go with 3-1 United, I'd say.
Now that Keane has obviously shaven his beard, is there any standouts in the league that we can look to for a bit of?
We could talk about past beards.
Past beards.
David James used to have a fantastic. James. You think I look like
an array of horrible haircuts?
he liked his hair and his fashion and everything. Spice Boys kind of crack. But he had a good beard at one stage. In terms of the league,
right now,
I can't think of one.
Funny. It's something that's a trend right now.
We can't think of one.
There's a genuine lack of it at the top clubs, isn't there? And I can't think of anyone. Look, that's what we can do for next week.
Yeah.
We can find someone while watching football over the weekend. Just before we do wrap it up, Keane, for those that play fantasy football, who's going to score most points this week?
This week, Di Maria.
Di Maria.
Yeah. Di Maria is going to have a good week, I think. And Sacco could have a good week also, I think, for West Ham.
Cesc Fabregas.
Do you think, Cesc?
Crystal Palace.
Do you think Costa will get a lot of points then, courtesy of Fabregas? He's in everybody's team anyway, isn't he?
He is, and Mourinho has just commented on that he's actually a doubt. He's a doubt for the game.
He's been saying that.
Seemingly all week, and he's also actually trying to pop at Roy Keane and Paul Lambert today. The criticism in Roy Keane's book, if you haven't read the book, he briefly touches on what aggravating about Mourinho before Villa and Chelsea play, before the full time whistle, before the game, he went over to shake their hands, basically saying, well, you've already lost the last few minutes don't really matter.
Yeah, it's very disrespectful, I think. He's done that a lot now. He even done it at the back end of last season when Chelsea weren't challenging for the league. He said it was because he likes to leave the game early and tell his wife the result or something. But
does she not watch the games?
You think?
Does she not listen to the games? Does she not got a mobile phone device with social media?
Alex Ferguson's wife wasn't too big on football.
Leave Cathy out of it.
I won't say anything bad about Cathy. If she can put up with Sir Alex Ferguson, she's a saint.
Just on that, in today's press conference, Mourinho, on Keenan Lambert's criticism, he said, I appreciate the comments. I think they are both great examples of polite and educated men. Very keen, polite.
Very tongue-in-cheek from Jose, isn't it?
It's nothing new, is it?
Yeah.
Nothing new. We're going to leave it on that note. The first episode of Keno's Beer Podcast, we hope you enjoyed it. Please
give us your feedback.
Give us your feedback and share it on, say, Facebook, Twitter. It will be uploaded hopefully by Friday night, if not Saturday morning. That's it. Thanks for joining me, Erkeen.
Thank you for joining me. We'll go back to our daily lives now. Talk to you later.
Of admiring beards.